welcome back. We're glad that you are joining us for another Basic Conversation. Father Basic, let's say we talk about John Courtney Murray. Do we have anything good to say? How can we frame his life and his impact?
Well, we should say something about him. He was probably the most famous and articulate American Catholic theologian in history. And I only heard him once. I never talked to him personally. I heard him lecture once. He was urbane, articulate, smart, not afraid to use difficult words. You had to pay attention when he was talking to catch everything that he was trying to say. But, I mean, let's go back. He was a Jesuit, so that's important. All the Jesuits are influenced by the spiritual exercises. I've lived with the Jesuits in Oxford in England and in New York at Fordham, and they are just the spiritual exercise that they learn and study and do retreats with and give retreats is in their bones and blood. Mm. And it's a beautiful thing. It makes them great educators and so on. And so Murray was an articulate, well-educated Jesuit theologian. And I think that he probably first came to prominence in the period before the 1960 election, which featured John Kennedy running as the Democratic candidate, which produced all kinds of issues and so on. It was that year that John Courtney Murray published a book, We Hold These Truths, such an important book and so filled with wisdom and so on. And I've used his ideas a lot and in the public forum and so on. But anyway, we hold these truths. So the question at that time was, could a Catholic become president and would he be faithful? The nativist prejudice said that a Catholic can't be president because his first allegiance will be to the Pope and not to the Constitution. And so Murray published the book at that time, which was so important in the election of John Kennedy. And fundamentally, he said, there's not a problem. A Catholic candidate can be fully faithful to the Constitution, to the American way of life, to the First Amendment. That's part of his argument. So he was a truly American theologian, immersed in the political world and electoral politics. So John Kennedy went to Houston and gave a talk. I think Ted Sorensen wrote a lot of the talk, but it was definitely influenced by Murray. I don't really know how directly. I mean, I know Murray didn't write the talk. That was right before the election, 1960 election, when Kennedy won. But Kennedy went to Houston and went and said, my allegiance to the Constitution, to the country, and the Pope isn't going to be living in the White House, and the Pope isn't going to be telling me what to do. I think he distanced himself from his Catholic faith so much that it went in the other direction. You know, I mean, it was almost like my faith won't have anything to do with what I do, which is not a really good position to be in for any politician, whatever his religious background, because we'd like to think that religious traditions help mold character and help people to be dedicated to public service and to help people make good decisions on policies and so on. But Kennedy went to the extreme. Yeah.
Was the Catholic Church in the spotlight then versus, I mean, there was other spiritual presidents up before then, but the Catholic Church was in the spotlight because of the Pope and also the dogma that was public
Yeah.
And people could read it and say, wait a minute.
For sure.
Yeah.
And we need to get into that eventually, what the dogma was. And and it was scary in many ways. And, Murray, so I'm anticipating there. I want to sort of build up to it.
Sure.
But that, yes. People who said that Kennedy was not fit for office could find a lot of things in the Catholic tradition that supported them, a lot of things. Right. And mostly it was along the line of saying that if Catholics are in the majority, they should have privilege in the government. And the other part, the negative part of the teaching was, error has no rights. In other words, Protestants who in that time in the Catholic teaching were in error had no real rights in the country. And so that became the nub of John Corey Murray's life, really. He challenged that. That doctrine went back to early on in the Syllabus of Errors in the 19th century, and Pope Leo XIII writing in the 1890s. It was there.
And this was
it was held as part of the doctrine. It was an objection to religious liberty. So we can't have religious liberty because that would imply that we're saying that people in error are good people and so on.
And this was pre-Vatican II, so it was laying some, with that book laid some new groundwork.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. That's the story of Vatican II. So when you say Vatican II, we're talking about a council, Catholic council, that met from 1962 to 65. Four big sessions during the fall, over 2,000 bishops coming from all over the world, and they came together to discuss major issues and so on. And so they were able to reach consensus on many things. So the bishops assembled in Rome, meeting for 4 years periodically in the fall, came up with a review of the liturgy, the way the Catholic Mass was celebrated, and they hammered it out, they talked about it and so on, and the bishops taking charge of the council, they came up with the idea, well, the Mass should be in the vernacular, in the language of the people, and it should be simple, and the major goal should be to have all the people at Mass have full and conscious participation. That constitution passed with only 4 negative votes. It was 2,200 and some to 4. To 4. In other words, the council arrived at, and they did it before the council was over. So now there was the question of religious liberty. It became much more controversial. In other words, all these bishops, that's from all over the world, right? And the document on the church, same thing, that passed with 5 negative votes. So we got to the question of religious liberty, and it was debated in all 4 sessions of the council, 4 years. It had many different drafts. It was highly debated. It was very controversial. It made the news and so on. Now, John Courtney Murray, he was writing on that question way before the council. And fundamentally, he was saying this, that it's not true that the church needs a privileged position or wants it or has a right to it. And it's not true that saying that error has no rights. So he challenged in his writings, and he had all kind of articles, scholarly articles in the journals and so on, proposing that, no, we need freedom of religion. We need freedom of exercise. And the American system is great. The First Amendment is wonderful. So the First Manitou Club is a non-establishment. So that says in the United States you can't have a state religion. You can't have a privileged Catholic. Even if the Catholics had the overwhelming population of the United States, you could not have Catholicism established as a state religion. And Murray said, that's great. We don't need that. We don't want it. And you say things like, well, the church flourished in the United States because we had freedom, you know, and we made the best of it and so on. And then the free exercise. So he's writing all this stuff, and the Vatican doesn't like it. And the Vatican puts the pressure on the Jesuit order to tell Murray he couldn't write anymore. So he was an obedient, faithful son of the church. And symbolically, what he did was take all of the books in his library on the topic of religious liberty and symbolically take them out. So he didn't have in his personal library anymore those books. So it was a symbolic way of saying, I accept what the church is telling me. And what it was really the Jesuit authorities, but I think under the pressure of the Vatican, to suppress that. So he stopped writing about it. This is before the council. And so when the council gets started in 1962, the bishops were allowed to bring with them a theologian to guide them. Theologians played a tremendous role in the Second Vatican Council. So most of the bishops had their own theologian there. And then Pope John the 23rd had invited some theologians to be what they called a peritus, that's Latin for an expert, to council. So they gave lectures, they taught, and John Courtney Murray was not invited to be a peritus, an expert at the council. Now, we got to give credit to Cardinal Spellman in New York. The American bishops were all in favor of a document that would enshrine the American experience. That's interesting. The American bishops were in favor of that. So Cardinal Spellman got John Courtney Murray to come to the council as an expert and to participate in the discussions, which were heated and hard-fought on religious liberty. And Murray came and he started helping. There were many drafts of that thing. It was hard for them to get it right. And so now he's involved in it. See, that's how the council worked. There was discussion, there was debate, there was interaction with theologians and council leaders and so on, and they would produce a draft. And then the draft would be discussed and refined and so on. So the document on religious liberty was redrafted many times. And now Murray had a hand in doing that. And so as time went on, eventually he found a way to get the bishops to come on board to accept a document on religious liberty that would enshrine the American way of doing it, the First Amendment. And that took some tremendous theological skills to convince you. So the question is, how do you convince the bishops that we should adopt this? In one sense, the whole world was already in favor of that kind of democratic approach. We weren't breaking new ground. We were trying as a Catholic Church to catch up with where the rest of the world was. And as we were talking about the election, people could look at that and say, well, we can't elect Kennedy because he's going to have to try to establish the Catholic Church as the main religion in our country. So they had arguments, real arguments. And Murray was a decisive voice in overcoming that. So eventually, in the fourth session, after all these drafts, Murray found a way. Well, it happened in the third session, but so it was a question of conscience. Should we allow, should we say that no, all human beings have a right to conscience, to make their own decisions, and therefore we can't coerce their views on government and so on. And Murray, it didn't work. So Murray changed the argument and said, no, you know, the reason we ought to be open to our style, to non-established free exercise, is based on the dignity of the human person. Now, that might sound subtle, and I guess it is, but that argument, he was able to convince more bishops, so they came on board. And so we have to allow religious freedom because of the dignity of the human person. Not the rights to follow their conscience, but the dignity of the person. That became the decisive argument in the final document that was accepted by the council.
And Murray also saw a big role for universities when it came to
religious. Yeah, let's make sure we've wrapped up this other thing before, yeah. Yeah, we can do that. Do we have a lot of time?
We have plenty of time.
Oh, good. So let's make sure we got hold of this contribution of Murray. So in a sense, it's the American contribution to Vatican II. Now, most of the leaders of the council were from Europe, really. They took hold of the council and managed to overcome the resistance of the curial bishops, the people working in the Vatican, and to get this. So when they finally got around to vote, well, this document on religious liberty got 70 negative votes. Remember what I said before, liturgy was 4. So there still was an opposition at work there. And that came largely from what we call the bishops in charge of the Roman Curia. And they were the ones that wrote the original documents that the council was supposed to talk about. And when they got there, the bishops, especially European bishops, said, well, no, we're going to produce other documents. And John the 23rd helped that. Like, they couldn't get by some question. He'd say, well, let's have a new commission to write a new draft. That's how they managed it. So John Courtney Murray becomes a hero of Vatican II. And he became a force for getting John Kennedy elected. So he played a role in American politics that way. Played a role in the Vatican too. So he too was on the cover of Time magazine one time. You know, not many theologians got that. Reinhold Niebuhr was on one of the Time magazines, and John Courtney Murray was the only Catholic theologian who was ever on the cover of Time magazine. That's sort of a measure of whether the culture, and the largely secular culture, didn't appreciate what happened at Vatican II. I mean, they said, well, everybody thinks human beings that should be respected and should have a right to follow their conscience and so on. There was nothing new, but by the Catholics who were trying to make it in the culture, it was a godsend. It was great help, and it helped John Kennedy get elected.
Do we want to talk about universities, or do you want
to... Why not?
So the role of universities in the idea of religious freedom.
Yeah. Yes. I could use a personal example, of how I used Murray. At the University of Toledo, we wanted to establish a chair of Catholic studies. That became a great goal of Father Dan Zach and myself. We wanted to have a new facility where we could worship, and we wanted to establish a chair of Catholic studies. So we're proposing that idea, and we're working our way through it, and we ran into opposition from friends of mine, and they remained friends, from Church United for Separation of Church and State, Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and a good Protestant minister friend of mine. they became opposed to the idea. In fact, there were letters in the editor in the paper, collegiate paper, supporting and against. The opponents brought in speakers to make the point, say, this isn't right. This is giving privilege to Catholics.
At the University of Toledo.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a public institution.
Yeah, a public, yeah, state, good, state university, yeah. It's not proper to state university. So we had to make the argument. I used Murray, here was Murray's idea. People attending university, students, many of them have religious convictions. Many of them belong to churches. Many of them practice Protestant or Catholic or Jewish or Muslim, whatever. And they have a right to know about it. Murray said that students should have the opportunity to examine, look at what was going on in their religious tradition. And so that was part of our argument. The other part of the argument was, well, the way to respond to this is to establish chairs in other religious groups. That was James Madison's idea early on, that the way that factions worked is one faction could counterbalance others and so on. So our argument wasn't, well, no, we got a right to have this Catholic chair. It was, no, why don't we all? Why don't other groups? I was very involved in encouraging them. Eventually, we got a Muslim chair. Eventually, we got a chair in Judaic studies. So we had to fight our way through that. And we got the Bishop of Toledo on board that this is a good thing. Public education should have a religious element. There should be opportunity all the way through the school system to study. Everyone said, well, you can't have religion in public schools. Well, you could study religion in public schools academically. And the goal is to understand it, not to proselytize. Can't do that. Proselytize, try to make converts. You can't do that. But you can talk about it, you can understand it, you can see its strengths and weaknesses, you can see its historical development, you can see its major figures, and that would be a good thing. And you could do that in the public schools, and you can do it at a state university. And so we ended up, we got support of the major newspaper, the Toledo Blade, through the good efforts of my priest colleague, Father Bob Kirtland, who happened to be a good friend of the owner of the Blade. And we got a positive editorial in the Blade saying this would be a good thing. And we kept trying to talk to the opponents and so on and assure them. And so we finally got the chair established. My good friend Tom Murray in Sandusky donated money named after his parents, Thomas and Margaret Murray, to start the chair. Well, we had very limited funds in the beginning, and I held the position at first. And what I did was to take the salary I received from that and use it to invite in speakers from around the country, the best of the Catholic speakers that I knew.
It was the Murray Lecture Series.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it became an established thing. And, of course, it was open to everybody. And that became a powerful force. So to get back to John Courtney Murray, he supplied us with the rationale for having this and the insistence that the emphasis had to be on understanding. So when I wrote my syllabus for the class, the goal is to understand history, development, et cetera, of the Catholic tradition. You know, in those early classes, I think it was the People United, America's United for Separation of Church and State, or somehow the ACLU got into it. And they monitored my classes. And, I mean, I knew that. These were friends of mine. I mean, I wasn't fighting with them. We had a disagreement, and but they monitored my classes to make sure that I was not proselytizing and so on. And I think we worked out ways to have objective tests and to satisfy them. I kidded with them a lot and saying, I hope you guys keep opposing this because it's increasing my attendance at class.
What's going on in that lecture hall, right?
Yeah, people, right. We better get in there.
Curiosity.
Yeah, right. So over time that worked out, and there's a Muslim chair and a chair of Judaic studies and so on that complement one another. So Murray says we're better off as a society if we understand the religious traditions that are at work here. Oh, and that's what the chair has tried to do. And then we had tremendous people holding the chair. Ted Yarnold, one of the world's foremost, it was a teacher at Oxford, held the position. And then Rick Gilardi held it for 10 years. Anyway, I like to think it's been a successful thing. Not only that, but we sold the idea around the country. So part of my mission was to say, encourage universities to establish chairs of Catholic study. I wrote articles about it. I visited universities, Albuquerque, I was out there, New Mexico, University of Kentucky, Cincinnati, and often with the encouragement of the bishop saying, here's the advantages of this. This is a good thing. You can't control every aspect of it, but that's okay. On balance, good things will happen. And we established, I can think of 3, 4, 5 chairs that I was involved in establishing at other universities. So the idea caught on in many ways.
Mm. What's a concluding item that we want to bring to light about Murray?
Yeah. Well, then I'd have to rehearse something. I didn't go into it. Murray is just what we need. And Murray said, in looking at the political system, we are in danger of attack by barbarians, and that you can't let the barbarians take over. Barbarians are the ones who don't want dialogue, want monologue.
They want power. And
they want power,
fear,
no matter what. Get reelected, no matter what. They're the barbarians, and we can't let them take over. We have to try to balance that or get them involved or return to civil discourse. And we have to have self-evident truths. We're built on self-evident truths. We're created by God, given inalienable rights.
The founding fathers.
Exactly. Yeah. We're founded not on soil, geography. We're founded on an idea, a proposition. It's an experiment, and as Lincoln saw it, so hoping our better angels surface. So that's something we didn't get into, but that is so current right now. We can't let the barbarians take over. We have to have civil. And he said, one of the worst things is this idea that there's alternate facts. That phrase, there's not alternate facts. Hannah Arendt, Jewish philosopher, said that you have to have agreed upon facts. Murray said that you have to have things we agree on, the American proposition. Then we can be locked in argument. I love that phrase. We'd be locked in argument. Serious discussion about what do we do about the border. Serious discussion, bipartisan approaches. That's what Murray would be encouraging us to do today in a very practical way.
Thank you once again, Father Basic. It's been a great discussion on the great theologian, John Courtney Murray.